So by now, pretty much everyone knows that Thomas Jefferson had a sexual relationship with his slave, Sally Hemings, and that they had children. But 20 years ago, the Jefferson-Hemings relationship was mostly a rumor that his white descendants denied. And then, a brilliant legal scholar, Annette Gordon Reed, proved it with historical records, stories passed down by Sally Hemings' children, even DNA evidence. She became the first African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize for History, followed by a MacArthur Genius Award. And she told Steve Paulson this story is a perfect example of the way many Americans have tried to bury and deny the real history of slavery.
I think most people in the Black community did not doubt it because we understand that this kind of thing happened quite a bit. And so it didn't seem like it was wild and crazy. I would say that most historians did not believe it was true. And there were a variety of reasons. There was sort of an old view, well, Jefferson was a Southern gentleman, and this sort of...
He wouldn't do this.
He wouldn't do this. There was this sort of treacly treatment of Southern life, you know, moonlight and magnolias and honor and all that kind of stuff, which is not real. All those kinds of things are based upon lies, obviously. But then there were also people who felt that he was too racist to have been involved in a long-term liaison with a, whatever you want to call it, relationship connection with an African-American woman. So it was either he was too honorable or he was too racist.
Hmm. Well, we should give a brief sketch, a brief history of what we know about the connection between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. So it started in Paris, right? When Jefferson went over to Paris and he was, what, ambassador?
He went over for a diplomatic mission. Jefferson went over in 1784 and he took his eldest daughter, Martha, called Patsy, and James Hemings, who was Sally Hemings, is one of her older brothers. And he took James over to have him trained as a chef. Jefferson liked French cooking and he wanted his own chef at Monticello. He left behind two of his daughters and Sally Hemings, who was the companion to these girls. They were all children, basically. Sally Hemings is only a few years older at this time than these girls. During the time that Jefferson is there, the younger daughter dies, and Jefferson, at this point, is determined to have his other daughter brought to him. But he asks for her to come over with, he says, a careful Negro woman. Instead, Jefferson's sister-in-law, who in this convoluted story was also Sally Hemings' half-sister, because Jefferson's wife and Sally Hemings were half-sisters. They had the same father,
John Wales. The same white father.
The same white father, John Wales. And they sent her over, and Sally Hemings is 14 at this time, and Polly, the younger daughter, is about 9. So she is the sort of caretaker, companion slash to Polly. And at some point during this time period, Madison Hemings said his mother became Mr. Jefferson's concubine. It's sort of interesting because everybody called him Mr. Jefferson when they were speaking to other people. And France was not free soil in the sense that you set foot in France and you were immediately free, but everybody who petitioned for freedom in France had the petition granted. So James and Sally Hemings could have remained there, and they thought about doing it.
This is fascinating. I mean, so they are slaves
back in Virginia.
Back in Virginia, but in Paris, presumably, they just need to petition for their freedom and they could be free.
They could be free people. And I think Jefferson was on the defensive about this because he does something that he continues later on, but he pays them wages while they're there. One of the things I'll never know, obviously, but I'd like to know how they presented themselves, because these are two people who might have been able to pass for white.
They were light-skinned.
They're light-skinned people, and they could well have presented themselves as just servants to Jefferson without this other overlay of slavery. So, yes, they could have had that. Jefferson, according to Madison Hemings, wanted Sally Hemings to come back with him and promised her that she would have a nice life at Monticello and that their children would be freed when they were 21.
And, of course, the other side of this is by the time they go back to America, Sally Hemings is pregnant.
Yes.
With Jefferson's child, and she's 16 years old. What's she going to do, I suppose, if she stays in Paris? I mean, that would be pretty tough.
It would be tough, but if she were there with James, I know someone is actually working on a sort of alternative novel about Sally Hemings staying there. One of the things that could have happened is that she could have stayed there with Jefferson's secretary, William Short, who was anti-slavery, who remained in Paris and remained in Europe for a number of years. You know, she could have been a maid to him. James could have been the cook for him. Yes, it would have been tough, but, you know, it could have been tough back at Monticello if he hadn't. Jefferson could have reneged on everything. He could have died.
At least according to Madison Hemings, the son who later wrote about this. I mean, after talking with his mother, Sally and James sort of extracted promises from Jefferson that they would be treated differently once they go back.
Well, Sally certainly did. That was the condition. Madison Hemings said that that was a condition on which his mother came back. She would be treated well and her children would be freed. And so they come back to Monticello. The sons are put under the tutelage of one of her brothers, John Hemings, who is a master carpenter at Monticello.
And how many children did she have?
She had seven children, but only four of them lived to adulthood, which was sort of a thing that happened.
And as far as we know, Thomas Jefferson was the father of all of them.
As far as we know, the father of all of them. And that's what Madison Hemings says and Israel Gillette Jefferson says. And then the DNA, it's corroborating. It's not a strict paternity test. But when you look at anything, it's a compilation of evidence. It's not any one killer thing.
What did people say about Sally Hemings? How did people describe her?
Well, they didn't say much. Most of the descriptions of her are physical descriptions. People describe her as being very beautiful. That was the thing that people fixated on. One newspaper report, when the scandal broke, described her as, someone said that she was industrious and orderly.
Now, when you said the scandal broke, some of Jefferson's political enemies heard about this, and they tried to make hay about it. Look what Jefferson has, the scandal in his own family.
It caused a real stir. It sort of spread everywhere. It didn't really affect Jefferson's career, I mean, in the sense that he was reelected resoundingly.
And maybe some people reacted that way because it actually was not that uncommon.
No. Yeah, certainly people in the South understood that this kind of thing happened. Jefferson had a reputation, however, of this sort of philosopher. You know, the stereotypes that people have, well, if you're really intellectual, you know, you're not interested
in sex.
I mean, which is ridiculous. But
right.
18th century people were not prudes. People had sex and they had a different attitude about sex. The Victorian age comes later. These people were not Victorians. But I think realistically people thought, this is the South. This is what happens when men are in control of women.
So how would you describe this relationship between Jefferson and, I mean, the question is, what word do we use? I mean, you mentioned that that their son, Madison Hemings, referred to his mother as Jefferson's concubine. The word mistress has been used to describe her. Is there an appropriate word here?
Well, the word concubine, I actually went back and looked at legal cases. White women were referred to as concubines. A concubine was a person who lived with a man without being married, period. That's what it was. And there are some cases when the men married the women. So you can go from concubine to being wife.
And we should point out that Jefferson's wife had died.
Oh, yes. Jefferson's wife is dead.
Before any of this happened.
Yeah, Jefferson's wife died in 1782. And the Hemings women tell a story that when she was on her deathbed, she asked Jefferson not to remarry. The Hemings women say that she said she did not want another woman over her children. They said Jefferson agreed to that. So she died. He was 39 years old, and he died when he was 83. He never remarried. That's a long time.
And apparently, I mean, this relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings went on for a long time, for years and years.
Yes. The span of her childbearing is basically 20 years. So you can only say that's the definite time period where you know for a fact they're having sex. But she was his chambermaid until he died. So he arranged their lives so that she was in it all the time, basically, for 38 years. The Hemings family oral history talks about how he felt about her. One of Madison's granddaughters said, Mr. Jefferson loved her dearly. But he doesn't talk about how she felt about him.
Because, I mean, that is the question a lot of people ask. Did they love each
other? Yeah, people ask me that all the time, and there's no real way to know that, the answer to that.
Is that a legitimate question to ask if we're talking about a master-slave relationship?
Well, a lot of people think it's not an appropriate question to ask because it's not possible for that to be. But I don't subscribe to that because human beings do all kinds of things that they shouldn't do. You know, I might say, I could list all the reasons why you shouldn't feel that way, but that doesn't have anything to do with the way human beings live in the world. I think that's largely a political judgment, a sort of after-the-fact political judgment about how uncomfortable we are with this idea. Madison Hemmings talks about them in the Recollections. He clearly is talking about them as if they are a family. And that's kind of jolting in a way.
Sally and her children were treated very differently than the other slaves on Jefferson Plantation, right?
Yes. Madison Hemmings says that they were happy growing up because they knew they were not going to be slaves all their lives.
What eventually happened to the children who did survive into adulthood of Sally and Tom?
Well, Beverly is a male, and his sister Harriet, those are the two oldest children, they left Monticello to live as white people. They don't have freedom papers, and you can see why they don't want them, because if they had freedom papers, people would know that they were part black because they'd been enslaved, and you'd be able to trace them. One reason we don't know about their descendants is because they have no paper trail. We know about Madison and Esten, and that's the thing about documents. That's the importance of them. Once you put things down in writing, you can at least begin to locate where people are and then research and find out about them.
But this is fascinating. You're saying that some of the children moved away and passed as white.
Yeah.
And others didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, they retained their African-American identity.
Yes. Madison and Esten are freed in Jefferson's will. Madison is 21 at the time, and Esten is 17. So Jefferson frees them and makes them apprentices to John Hemmings. So they live in Charlottesville. They take their mother. Sally Hemmings is not formally freed. She's what they call given your time. She leaves Monticello, and they move into Charlottesville. And they stay there until she dies in 1835. And then Madison leaves first. He goes out to Chillicothe, Ohio. And then Esten follows him. Esten lives in Ohio for a time until things get to be really bad. They start cracking down on black people. And he decides that he doesn't want that for his children. So he moves to Madison, Wisconsin. He changes his racial designation in the census in Virginia. He is in Ohio. He is colored. He's a Negro. He changes his name from Esten Hemmings to Esten Hemmings Jefferson, or E.H. Jefferson. That's what he goes by. And his children change their names. And the children become very prosperous people. They own hotels and a cab company. They have a life that they could not have had if they stayed in the black community. So people around him knew the story, but eventually, that line, that family line, loses the story of Sally Hemmings. They lose the story of Thomas Jefferson, and they don't find out until Fawn Brody's book in the Recollections when she's talking about Esten. They thought that their ancestor's name was E-S-T-Y, Esty Jefferson, and that they were related to Jefferson through an uncle, because you can't keep Jefferson as an ancestor, because we know Jefferson didn't have any legal sons with his wife, so they made up a new story, which people who pass have to do, or else, you know, it doesn't work. And so they didn't find about the connection until the 1970s. They'd been trying to do genealogy,
amazing.
And they sort of get back to a certain point, and they couldn't go any further.
Yeah.
And it's because they had changed the story.
So the big question that people have been asking for decades is, what do we make of Thomas Jefferson? This revered founding father who wrote the major part of the Declaration of Independence saying that all men are created equal, you know, the great document of freedom and equality, who was not just a slave owner, but had this intimate relationship with this slave woman for years and had children together. I mean, what do we do with
that? Well, that kind of thing was a part of being a slave owner. I mean, the real problem with Jefferson is the connection to slavery. And we've always known that. But I think what is happening now is people are understanding that slavery was not just about making people work for no money or whipping people or whatever. It was an institution that ended up with mixed bloodlines in a lot of different ways, through rape, through connections that we don't understand and that make us uncomfortable. I think the thing to make of it is that Jefferson was a person.
We should take him down from the mountain as this revered icon.
No, there are things to admire about Jefferson. And we're just going to have to grapple with the fact that a person who wrote the Declaration of Independence and helped create the country, not just Jefferson, but Washington and all of them, a number of them were slaveholders. They held people in bondage and profited from that. I think you have to take the bitter with the sweet. And I don't know that it's ever good to revere people as gods in a way, because they're always going to disappoint you. I think a better way to look at it is to say, this is what these human beings did on their time on Earth. And some of it was good and some of it was bad. And what can we live with and what things do we reject? How do we move on from that? Jefferson didn't think that we were going to stay in one place.
But he had a pretty pessimistic view of race relations, didn't he? I mean, he was racist.
Yeah,
I mean, he thought black people were inferior, were not as smart as white people.
And that's what most people at that time thought, and that's what a lot of people think today. There's no question about that, even though he says, I venture it as a suspicion only. But it's not a suspicion. He believed that whites were better than blacks. That was the currency of the time. I do think he thought slavery was wrong, but it's like many other things that we believe that we don't live by. This was not what really animated Jefferson. I mean, we're interested in slavery and race, and we should be, but that's not the main thing he was interested in. He was interested in the United States of America. He'd been part of a revolution that overthrew a king and created a new society. That's what he was fixated on. That slavery thing, that'll solve itself. But it's like many things in life. You say, if I could just fix this, that little thing over there, it'll be fine. But it's that little thing over there that destroys the thing that you love.
Yeah.
And slavery was, he came to see, the rock upon which the Union will be split. And that was true.
Yeah. Thank you very much. This is just a fascinating history.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's Harvard legal historian Annette Gordon Reed talking with Steve Paulson. Her book, The Hemingses of Monticello, won a Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award.